Hello and welcome to the Success Showcase. I'm your host, Eric Lopkin from the Modern Observer Group. And with me as always is Chip Januszewski from the Happiness and Success GPS. Chip, how are you doing this week?
Doing great, Eric. It's a gold medal day after a weekend of rain. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And you know, we're just coming off the completion of the Winter Olympics. And it's been an interesting run for the U.S. The women's hockey team took gold over Canada for the first time in 20 years. And we won our first gold medal in curling.
The new all-American sport.
There you go. Again, I don't think a lot of Americans know a lot about curling. I know I certainly don't. But I love the camaraderie of the sport, because any sport that puts in the official rules that the losing team has to buy the winning team a beer is okay in my book. You know, that's showing sportsmanship.
Yeah, and a lot of the players, because they do play in these leagues around the world or whatever, they know each other very, very well. So the Swedes and the U.S. team actually knew each other very well. But, you know, talking about the spread of curling, I think out of the four players on the U.S. team, the captain was from Wisconsin, and the other three, I think, were from Minnesota.
Well, that doesn't actually surprise me. I mean, where else in the U.S. are you going to really get into curling?
Yep. Well, Minnesota, you can probably play outside all year, so.
You're right. I'm guessing you don't see a lot of curling in L.A., you
know? Only in salons.
Right. Well, we're actually going to go back a ways today, and we're going to talk about lessons that were learned back in 1980 with the USA hockey team. And for those of you who may be too young to remember this, for the Winter Olympics, the U.S. was not in a great place. The economy was bad. We were going through what Jimmy Carter phrased the great malaise. America needed something to inspire it. And as it turned out, that ended up being a ragtag team of college students who came together under Coach Herb Brooks to become the USA Olympic hockey team. And what really made them amazing was they came together from several colleges. Each of them had played hockey in college, but very few of them had played together. They had only a few months to train as Team USA. And they were going up against the Russians. And the Russian hockey team dominated for years. This was a team that had worked together for years. Before the Olympics, not only did they beat our Olympic hockey team, but they also beat the NHL All-Stars.
Yeah, they not only beat them, they beat them 6-0.
Yeah.
And to do a little bit of a background here, this was before pro players were allowed to play basketball or any other game. And the bottom line is the Soviet Union, their players were all amateurs in an amateur league in a communist country. And so in the U.S., there were no National Hockey League's players allowed and so on. And just to the Soviet dominance, they had won the gold medal in 64, 68, 72, and 76. And obviously they were very, very heavy favorites in 1980. So it was just an amazing feat.
It really was. And this team came together. And there are certain lessons that we can all take from their success. And that's what we want to talk about. And one of the first things, and I think probably one of the hardest things for the team to overcome, was the fact that prior to becoming Team USA, these guys were used to playing each other. They were rivals. They had not only had they not worked together before, they had actively played against each other.
Yeah, you had a lot of players from Wisconsin and Minnesota who were bitter rivals. You had players from Boston University and Boston College, because college hockey was really, really only strong back then in the northern Midwest and in the Northeast.
Right. And Herb Brooks had to take these players who, in some cases, hated each other's colleges. I mean, bitter rivalries. And form them into a team. And that was not easy. Herb Brooks, after one loss, had the team doing exercises, I believe short shifts, over and over and over. And they closed the rink, and he kept them there, doing it over and over. And he would not stop until one player finally realized what he was doing and identified himself as playing for Team USA.
Yeah, and on that, the coaches kind of had to step in to stop what was going on there too. It was really, it was a very, very tough situation. The background on this is the U.S., this was a game where they scrimmaged against the Norway team, and Norway was a very, very weak team, and they scrimmaged to a 3-3 tie, and the players didn't really even care that much about it. In fact, they were saying that they were focused more on looking at the girls in the stands than playing hockey. So this is what really, really pushed Coach Brooks' button, and he was going to really show them that. And you know, if you watch Miracle on Ice, and I'm sure the documentary, that was just absolutely brutal what happened. He would probably be in jail if he had tried to do that today, but it got
probably for him. But it got his message through. It taught them that they had to actually focus on the game and focus on working together. And that's something, you know, whether in business, in life, it's something a lot of us lose focus on. You know, we get so caught up in the day-to-day and what's going on right now and, you know, possibly who our competition is, that we don't think about cooperating with them. We don't think about, you know, how to push past this into a win-win situation. And it's something you see it within industries, but most people don't realize it. The pharmaceutical industry, for example, you have companies that the two companies will produce competing drugs, but they'll also be collaborating on a different drug. So they're competition and cooperators at the same time.
Yeah, and what the players decided to do on the team and what Brooks did was he actually made it me versus them, which was one way to force teamwork and camaraderie. It's something that's been used before in other sports, but that he really took that to the hilt. And yet when the time was getting closer to make the cuts for the Olympic team and so on and so forth, he got more into doing some team building stuff and working with the players that way. And when he had to cut the team from 26 down to 20 players, he was known to be pretty empathetic to the players that he had to cut them because they were getting close. And yet going into the Olympics, they scrimmaged against the Soviets and they lost their scrimmage game 10-3.
Yes. So
odds were pretty stacked going into things.
The odds were stacked against them. And that scrimmage game actually taught them a lot. And one of the other lessons that they had to learn, and they learned it the hard way, and most of the other Olympic teams did not learn this, was not to overestimate your opponent. You don't want to underestimate, but you don't want to overestimate either. the Russian hockey team were just hockey players. They were just people. They had built up this mystique over the years of being so dominant and so intimidating that they just generated fear. And the U.S. team had to get past that fear in order to see them as another hockey team that can make mistakes and can be taken advantage of.
Yeah, and that's where Coach Brooks came in so key, because he worked on their minds as well as their physique. Part of the deal is in the third period of the final game when they did beat the Soviets. They actually were outplaying the Soviets by then because they had a lot more stamina, because they had been working a lot harder. But a lot of this comes down to the battle of the hearts and the minds. And, you know, you hear quotes. Michael Ruzioni said, "We all knew that the world thought what the world thought of our chances. We all knew the only people who believed in us were the guys in the locker room." And they did believe. And then goalie Jim Craig, who was a winning goalie, with the flag wrapped around him, said, "Conventional wisdom said that we couldn't win, but conventional wisdom also leads many coaches and athletes to play not to lose rather than to do whatever it takes to win. Coach Brooks ran every practice preparing us to win. He gave us the courage to do what nobody believed we could." And, you know, it was just so important that he instilled that into him. The bottom line is, exactly as you said, they weren't even thinking about the Soviets. They were just looking in the mirror and realizing what they could do.
And that's it. It was literally training mind and body to work together. And they worked as a team, and they focused on what they could do, not what the opponent could do. And, you know, when you don't believe, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, there's not a lot you can do. I mean, Henry Ford has a very famous quote: "Whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right." And this team came together believing that they could win. And another part of that mindset was that they were playing to win. And there is a big difference between playing to win and playing not to lose.
Yeah, and they had to actually gather momentum in the tournament too. After they lost to the Soviets, they went into the first game against Sweden, which back then was ranked number 3 in the world. Remember, the U.S. was not ranked hardly at all. They weren't expected to do anything. And they were down 2-1 with less than 1 minute left in the game, and they tied that game. And people forget about that. And if they didn't tie that game, chances are they wouldn't even have made the medal round to play for that. And that got them going, because the next game they're playing Czechoslovakia, which was the number 2 ranked team in the world. They're the ones that, if anybody was going to give the Soviets trouble, it was supposed to be them. And they went out and they won that game 7-3 after coming back to tie Sweden. So they were on a roll. And they rolled through everybody until they got to the game against the Soviets.
Well, no, they didn't roll through them, though. Every game they played, they came from behind. And that's something else that we can all learn from, is that at no time did they ever stop playing. They never looked at the score and went, "That's it, it's over, you know, we give up." They came from behind. They tied. They won.
Yeah, and getting back again to another quote by Jim Craig, talking about seizing the adversary's advantage, "Coach pushed us harder than any of us had ever been pushed," he said. But he did it because he knew that the great strength of that Russian team was that its players were incredibly better shape at the end of the game. They blew people away in the third period. And they took that, the U.S., and they became the better shaped team, and they were able to actually outplay them in the third period. And I think game 5 against West Germany, which the U.S. did win 4-2, as I recall, I think they were down 2-1 going into the third period of that game and came back and scored 3 goals to win that game too. So third period stamina, playing the whole 60 minutes, was really so important, and that's why he did it. And the bottom line is, the team realized that. He realized that this is why they were working so hard. And obviously it paid off.
Right. I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners have actually played hockey, But being on the ice for a full 60 minutes is exhausting. And to be able to do this, they trained over and over and over. And when they thought they were done training, they trained some more. And part of this was because they had to build up the stamina to go the full 60 minutes. But another part of it was the U.S. was such an underdog. The Russian team had played together for years. The U.S. team had months. The Russian team had a full Russian program behind them. The U.S. team had nothing like that. So they had fewer resources. They had much less time. They had to make it up somehow. They had to do it by effort. They worked harder to make up for that lack of time, that lack of resources, and they made up the difference.
Yeah, I think Coach Brooks scheduled like 40 or 50 exhibition games. They played a lot of hockey to get ready for this. They played almost like an NHL schedule of exhibition games before they even got to the Olympics. And that takes a lot of work, because hockey is not an easy game to play. You're skating really fast. You're on the ice for 2 minutes. You're off for 2 minutes. You're back on. And it's, going 100 miles an hour the whole time.
Exactly. And they pushed forward, not making an excuse that, oh, we don't have enough time. Not making the excuse about the resources. They made it up with effort. And they crammed training, after game, after game, into that time to make sure they were ready. And again, it also goes back to what we said about playing to win rather than playing not to lose. These guys were not playing just to be there. Their goal was to win. And that's another lesson that we also need to take, is that you can't take your eye off the ball until it's over. And these guys had to do this each and every game, play the full 60 minutes. But just as important, most people forget that we beat the Russians. That wasn't the gold medal round. They still had another game to play after that. And they had to keep their eye on that medal and keep pushing through. And so many of us get to a point where we can be so close to a goal and go, oh, you know, we're close enough. This is good enough. And you stop pushing before you get there. And that's detrimental to achieving the goal.
Yeah, they still had to go out and beat Finland.
Right.
That wasn't the easiest game either. They won that game 4-2, but I think they might have got an empty netter at the end to make it that way. But that was a nail biter also.
It was a nail biter, and there was also still a lot on the line, because if they had lost to Finland, depending on what went on with the other games, there was a possibility that they wouldn't get a medal at all. They could still have gone all that way and not even gotten a bronze had they lost to Finland. So they really did have to focus on every single game, doing the same thing over and over, practicing and pushing through. And I mean, it really was an amazing game to see these kids. And they were just kids. They were college students.
Yeah, 18 to 22 year olds.
Right. Coming out of nowhere, basically, because the U.S. didn't have an organized hockey program for the Olympics, came out of nowhere to take on the dominant team in the sport, who, as we said before, not only had beaten them in an exhibition game, but beat the NHL All-Stars.
Which back then, most of the great players in the NHL were not from the United States either. They were from Canada and some from Europe. But the U.S., even the pros in the U.S., would not have been favored to do that well in the Olympics that year.
Right.
So, but we just we talked a little bit about the curling team this past week, and the curling tournament was very, very interesting in that the skipper there, John Schuster, this was his fourth Olympics. And his first three, he actually was on a bronze medal winning team back in 2006. But he was the captain of the 2010 and the 2014 teams. And they both won, I think, two or three games in that whole thing. And therefore, afterwards, he wasn't even asked to come to the Olympic trials for this. So he actually ended up putting this team together to go compete against the other teams that were there. And that team of four actually won the tournament to get into the Olympics in the first place. Then what happens is they go and they lose four out of their first six games, some of them pretty badly. And he's struggling and the team is struggling. And he kind of had a revelation moment. His wife was talking to him and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden he just sat around. I'm reading this from the paper because it was such a great story yesterday after they'd done this. But he said, then I sat and looked all around at the Olympic venues. He said to myself, you're getting your heart broken by this sport. But this is silly. Seriously, this is the Olympics. And they said that's the first time he had slept well in days. And then the next morning, he happened to read a story about speed skater Dan Jansen, who you all remember was a wonderful skater back around the days of the Olympics back then in the 80s. And he, for one reason or another, was never able to win a gold medal until his final Olympic race. And what he did was he shook off, the article talked about how he shook off his disappointment and just focused and got out of the tragedy and went to win the gold medal. And the Americans didn't lose again. And they ended up beating Canada in one of the later games. And Canada had won like the last three golds in the Olympics. And then they beat Canada again in the semifinals to play Sweden. And I don't know how many of you folks out there know bocce ball or whatever, but basically what curling is all about is there's a circle in there, and however many more stones you have closer to the middle of that than the closest one from the other team, you get 1 point for each. So needless to say, sometimes nobody gets a point. Sometimes it's usually just 1 or 2 points. And the shot that this guy, John Schuster, shot, he had four in, and Sweden had two in, one of which was closer than the U.S. And rather than playing it safe, he went in there for the knockout, and he actually hit both of the Swedish stones, knocked them both completely out of the circle, which left five in for the U.S., and the score all of a sudden went from a tie game of 5-5 to 10-5 U.S., and at that point in time, there were just two, they call them ends, but it's just like an inning in baseball left where you just throw these things, and all he had to do was play defense and make sure Sweden didn't get one in there. So that one shot, for all intents and purposes, ended the whole gold medal. And it was just an amazing thing to watch. And if you do get a chance to watch like a replay or at least read about it, these folks really, really overcame adversity too. And, you know, it just goes to show that if you put your mind to something, magic can happen.
And it goes to show, you know, the curling team basically had to learn the same lessons that the 1980s hockey team did in that, They could not just give up early on, despite losing, what was it, 4 out of 6 games?
Yeah, they were 2-4, right. And they had to win 3 games in a row just to get to the medal round, including against Canada, who was, you know, 3-time defending Olympic champions. Then they had to beat Canada again in the Final Four, in the semifinals, and then Sweden, who was, you know, ranked ahead of them also. And Sweden had beaten them in the preliminaries by 3 or 4 points.
Right. So you do have the parallels where you've got a team that's got to push through, that's not favored to win anything, and is playing teams that they've already lost to. And now they've got to pull it out, pull themselves together, and push through.
Yep, and they won 5 games in a row where they had won a grand total of 4 games total in the last 2 Olympics. two games in each Olympics. So if anything, when they were 2-4, everybody picked them to finish last again.
And that's it. You know, you really have to remember that even though the odds can be against you, even though you may be off to a rocky start, you have to play the whole game. You have to play the whole series because you never know how it's going to turn out. You can turn these things around and really come out the winner.
Absolutely.
So we're just about out of time. So what do you think is the big takeaway that our listeners can get from these guys?
Well, Herb Brooks had a lot of great quotes, and unfortunately we lost them all too soon because he died in a car crash in 2003. But he had a quote that said about the team, he said, "Leaders tell us not what is, but what can be." He said, "That team taught us all what we can be." So never give up.
Absolutely. And that's really the huge takeaway, is that you can't give up. You have to give 100% and keep pushing through. And when you do that, you can go for the gold, no matter how big the odds are against you. You've been listening to the Success Showcase. You can listen to us every week at blogtalkradio.com/successshowcase. Or you can find us on the Apple Podcasts app, the iTunes Store, and wherever you find podcasts. Remember, make this your best week ever and make next week even better. See you then.